Hi, I'm Jason Wacob, founder and co-CEO of MindBodyGreen, and your host for the MindBodyGreen podcast, where I'll be bringing you deep and insightful dialogues with some of the greatest minds in wellness. If you like what you hear, please consider giving us a 5-star review and comment. And don't forget to visit us at MindBodyGreen.com for your daily dose of wellness, and make sure to check out all of our great offerings, including our online classes and trainings. Thanks, and enjoy the podcast. Hi, I'm Jason Wacob, founder and CEO of MindBodyGreen, the best-selling author of Wealth, and your host for the MindBodyGreen podcast, where I'll be bringing you deep and insightful dialogues with some of the greatest minds in wellness. If you like what you hear, please give us a 5-star review, comment, and share with your friends and family. And don't forget to visit us at MindBodyGreen.com for your daily dose of wellness. Thanks, and enjoy the podcast. Tim Brown is the co-founder of one of our favorite brands here at MindBodyGreen, the sustainable footwear company, Allbirds. He's a former professional soccer player from New Zealand, whose passion for simplicity and sustainability led him to create, according to Time Magazine, the world's most comfortable shoe. Allbirds is clearly one of the most innovative and disruptive companies in the world right now, and currently valued at over $1 billion. Tim, so great to have you here.
Thank you for having me. It's fantastic to be here.
So let's talk about the accent, because you're a Kiwi, you're from New Zealand, but you're not just a regular Kiwi. You were a professional soccer player. So let's talk about the journey from professional soccer player, World Cup, to the founder of Allbirds. It's a seamless transition that everyone makes.
Yeah. Well, the accent is, hopefully everyone can understand what I'm saying as a starting point. I grew up in New Zealand. I came to university here on a soccer scholarship, and then began a professional soccer career that ended up going for about a decade. And the business that was to become Allbirds was born while I was still playing soccer. In response to a few things that were part of my life, a few personal problems that I saw around footwear that was over logoed and over designed. And I ultimately set out to try and make shoes with no sense of how you do that or any sense of the industry. And really it was what I could only sort of term a curiosity project, really, that became ultimately a business.
So what does that curiosity project look like? You know, it's like you're playing soccer, you have this idea around Allbirds, and then how long does that process take while you're playing? And then when in the process do you say, like, all right, we got a brand here, we got a company, and so forth?
Well, the playing sport for a living was a dream come true, and it was also incredibly mentally demanding, and the demands of training every day and then performing and then ultimately winning and trying to win. And so what I found was that my afternoons were largely free, and I needed something to do that wasn't focusing on my job, and it ultimately became about reading and about discovery and ultimately about business and brands became just a really interesting sort of space for me to explore. And ultimately the idea of making a shoe was a reaction to actually the product I got for free as an athlete, and a belief that it was very, very hard to find simple. And what I mean by that was every sort of, I used to get free shoes. It was kind of like the coolest thing about playing sport.
Sure.
But it had logos and changed all the time, seemingly for no reason. And so I believed probably very naively or absolutely naively that there was an opportunity to kind of create something better. And I set out to try and do that. And I really had no idea. I mean, it was literally jump on Google, find a factory, visit in my off season. I mean, I look back on kind of the early beginnings of the journey of Allbirds, and I sort of think, what was I doing?
And what was the duration? When did that occur?
So, I mean, this would literally be sort of circa 2009. Like, and Allbirds didn't launch until the 1st of March 2016.
Wow, so 7 years.
Yeah,
and overnight success.
Well, I mean, it's really interesting. I mean, the business that Joe and I have built over the last sort of 3 years or nearly 3 years at Allbirds has had some success, and I think people overlook the fact that there was sort of 5 or 6 years of it being a bad idea before it became even remotely a good one. And that's been true for me twice now, because in my sporting career, you know, there was a real struggle for a long time, for many years, when, you know, trying to find my first contract, trying to sort of make it work, and then was very, very fortunate to go to the World Cup in 2010 with New Zealand, and then everyone wants to be your friend there. You know, so I've seen the arc of that trajectory twice, and I think, you know, particularly where we live in San Francisco, particularly in the context of entrepreneurship, people want to believe in the myth of the overnight success. It's just easier. It's easier to swallow that you wake up one day and you have a good idea, and the reality is...
Boom, unicorn.
It's not how it works, and in the case of Allbirds, the pain of trying to make this work and for so long not being sure that it was possible is ultimately, you know, if there's anything, that struggle is sort of why we've had some success, because we work so hard at it.
So what were the early core principles of Allbirds which carried through to today?
So the first time I went into a footwear factory, I saw an industry that was remarkably conservative and old-fashioned in the way that it thought. It hadn't really changed largely in 100 years in the way that shoes are made, reliant on low-cost manufacturing and labor, and with what I would sort of kind of call a prevailing low-cost mentality in the way that it approached things and the way that shoes were made and what they're made out of, and sort of saw an opportunity to do things differently. And what I subsequently have found to be my innovation alarm was going off, because I was asking very, very simple questions, very, very naive questions, because I knew nothing about how shoes were made and I wasn't getting very good answers. I was getting confusing answers, and it ultimately sort of propelled me to go and find, you know, better answers to the questions that I was asking.
So let's talk about what I'll call the three S's: simplicity, sustainability, and cheap.
Yeah. The first insight was around simple design, and it was the belief that the world didn't need lots more shoes. It needed one that was very, very simple, and it was very, very hard to find simplicity in a category that changed all the time. It was the first insight. Then I set out to, you know, try and make a shoe, and I stumbled into an industry that largely made shoes out of synthetics and not very nice leathers, and saw an opportunity to innovate with different types of materials, and that led you know, me as a Kiwi from the land of 27 odd million sheep to wool. And that ultimately became the purpose of the business, when we realized that there was an opportunity to make products that were not only more comfortable and that were better, but were also better for the environment. And so that really became the three things that are the founding pillars of Allbirds: simple design, comfort, and sustainability. And those three things have been our complete focus as a brand since we launched.
Talk a little bit more about the sheep. When I first heard about Allbirds, I was like, "Oh wow, this is interesting. This is unique."
It seems it's one of those things that seemed maybe obvious. Why haven't shoes been made out of wool before? And any good Kiwi will know that wool wicks away moisture, regulates temperature. It's this miracle fiber. And you know, I grew up with jumpers that were sweaters, that were knitted by my, you know, my grandma, and wore them to school out of wool. It was sort of wool is a big part of New Zealand's history, and the idea that it hadn't been used in shoes before seemed like one of those things that was an oversight or a miss. And I set out to try and work out why that hadn't happened. And the short answer was because it's very, very hard, and it was a, you know, years long journey to actually sort of innovate with the material, and that's non trivial and difficult. And the second part of it is, the whole entire footwear industry is largely reliant on a wholesale way of doing business with an intermediary, usually between the person that makes the product and the person that buys the product. And so it creates a situation where, you know, you tend to have to make shoes quite cheaply because of the margin structure. And so as a direct...
Give us an example of that. Typical margin. Like,
you know, you're buying a pair of, you know, shoes for, you know, from Foot Locker for $100. 50 bucks of that is going to the retailer.
Yep.
And
the manufacturer needs to make something. So it wasn't like a $2 product.
You just basically, there's cost pressure everywhere you go in footwear. And the opportunity for us as a business to go direct to consumer, cut out the middleman, which is obviously you know, an often told story in startups at the moment, where, you know, these large, often old fashioned categories are being disrupted by a different model of business, largely involving online e-commerce, but also in our particular case, retail. And it allows you to invest in materials, invest in, in our particular case, purpose, sustainability, and also to have a kind of a one-on-one relationship with your customer. And that was that unlocked a whole world of opportunity and potential in not only wool, but also, you know, more broadly in a range of other materials that we now use in our products.
What other materials?
So we started with wool. We added eucalyptus fiber, which was a really great success for us about, you know, a couple of years in, just before our second birthday. And then most recently, probably our biggest material moment, we added EVA is one of the most commonly used materials in footwear. It's sort of on the sole of most sneakers that you wear. It's sort of a light, cushy foam. And we found a way to take out the petrol and replace it with sugarcane, and launched a material called Sweet Foam, which is the world's first green EVA that we that we made in partnership with.
You're putting sugarcane to good use.
Yeah, and it was really, really one of those moments where, you know, on the long journey to kind of create something and build a brand, you're like, we're on the right track. We partnered with a really large energy company from Brazil. It took a number of years to sort of convince them that this was a good idea, and we launched this material a few months ago called Sweet Foam. In its raw form, the material is carbon negative, which was a huge sort of moment, and then we made it open source, so we made it available to the entire footwear industry to use. So it was one of those moments where it felt like we were really fulfilling on, you know, some of the reasons why we set out to sort of create the business in the first place.
Have other people, that's like a bold move. That's not open source. When I think of open source, I think of like coding and technology. It doesn't really, not commonplace in your industry, is it?
It's traditionally, it's about secrets and not sharing. Right. Ultimately, I think for us to fulfill our vision and be part of what we believe is, you know, a revolution in the way things are going to be made, a new revolution in sustainable manufacturing that we think has started, then it's not something we're going to do alone. That we need to be part of a larger movement where people find better ways to make stuff. And that's footwear, it's fashion more broadly, but it's kind of everything. It's, I think, you know, the problem of our generation, and it's why Joey and I started Allbirds, to be honest, and we go to the core of what this business stands for. It's trying to do things in a better way. And so we need to do that as part of a larger movement, not by ourselves.
Sure. Sustainability too. It's like, how can you not think about it with, you know, California recently, the fires, it's just insane. It's hard not to think about.
Yeah. And sort of outside of the fossil fuel industry, the fashion industry is the largest contributor of carbon emissions. There's 20 billion pairs of shoes a year made on average, largely made out of not very nice stuff. And, you know, the short answer is an incredibly complex problem. Can actually be solved if you make it a non-negotiable and you create business models that allow you to invest in the right materials and you think about sustainability not as a nice to have but as a non-negotiable.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you don't assume that consumers buy sustainability, they buy great products. So
right.
Make the best product you can, but make sustainability a non-negotiable in the way that you approach that. And I think if, you know, the industry as a whole, the fashion industry and more broadly, I mean, I think that moment is upon us. I mean, the UN report that you refer to sort of said, it came out a few months ago, that, you know, we've got 12 years to reverse the impact of global warming, or we reach some sort of irreversible tipping point.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the moment is kind of now. And I don't think it's about consumers changing their behavior, although I think that's a part of it. I think it's fundamentally about businesses changing the way they operate and the way that they think about making things.
So in terms of making things and being an innovator in this field, like who inspired you along this way? I'm curious, like what brands, what leaders?
You know, it's a great question. And look, the first point of inspiration was my co-founder, Joey. I mean, he'd come from the renewable materials space, working for a large biotech company with frustrations in the slowness of the adoption of the right materials. And so, you know, that really was the first inspiration for what has become the purpose of Allbirds. And then most notably, we met quite early on and spent some time with a guy called Eric Ryan, who's one of the founders of Method.
Sure.
Really impressive guy. And we were talking about, you know, the problem that we saw in footwear and in fashion, and belief that there was a real opportunity to make better products, but make them with sustainability in mind. And he said to us, he gave us some really interesting advice. He said, great, go do that. Don't talk about it. Everyone should be behaving that way. And the fact they're not is an opportunity. And so seize it. But don't pat yourself on the back. This isn't, you know, this is a very, you know, a difficult thing and not something that, you know, you should be shouting from the rooftops about. It's something you should do. And so we've tried to build a brand focused on making products that are about comfort, not about sustainability. And we've tried to really learn and understand and improve and make sustainability an internal purpose, not an outward, you know, thing that we talk about as much, because it's a very, very complicated topic and sort of something that is, you know, can always be improved on. And that's, you know, Eric was really, really helpful in sort of framing that in the early days.
So looking back most recently, you guys are in the Unicorn Club, apparently worth over $1 billion. So leading the way, as we talk about startups and direct-to-consumer, you've definitely built an incredibly strong brand and one that is focused on purpose and sustainability, which is really powerful. But looking back, when you launched in 16, did you have any idea where you would be today a couple of years later and how fast and what people are responding to?
As an entrepreneur, I think you have a vision for what you want to create, a problem that you're trying to solve, and you set out to kind of do that. And I don't think that either Joey or I could have imagined the type of traction that we would get with that idea. So the short answer is no. And this has been a wild and wonderful journey that has exceeded our dreams. But I do believe that there's something that drives you there that you believe can be better than what's existing. Mm-hmm. And that propels you forward to try and solve something that is, you know, difficult to do. So you toggle between confidence and then complete insecurity. anyone who's built anything will tell you the same thing, I'm sure.
Sure. You have moments where you have tremendous conviction and belief, and then there are moments where you're like, oh, man. Am I doing the right thing?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and you know, I mean, I think that's a healthy place to be. I think about that even in the context of sport, and you know, lean on my sporting experience. And the short answer is, you know, it doesn't matter how many games you've won previously; you can lose in the upcoming game. So, I think the ability to stay really sort of humble is, I think, really, really important in the process of building a business. And I, you know, when I sit here now, There's a lot of things that we've done well, but also many, many things that we need to do better. And particularly on the topic of sustainability, I think we're only just beginning to scratch the surface of what we need to do as a brand and a business.
So what are the things? I have like three questions out of that answer. So in terms of being an athlete, what are some of the biggest lessons? You know, for me, you know, I was not a professional athlete, but I played basketball in college. And I always say, like, I learned so much about being an entrepreneur from playing competitive sports than I ever did from school or anything else. Like, what are some of the takeaways that made you, you know, a better person, a better entrepreneur from playing professionally for a dozen years?
Oh, I mean, so many things. The team, that feeling, I don't think there's anything better than being in a group of people pointed towards something that's bigger than yourselves and achieving goals that you've set. I just don't think there's a better feeling. And I was very, very lucky to be part of some really special teams in sport and ones that, particularly in the case of the World Cup in 2010, were able to achieve something quite special. There's no better feeling than setting a goal with a group and then achieving that. And the idea of how we put the team together at Allbirds is sort of something that consumes a lot of Joey and I's time, quite honestly. And we've got a group of 150 plus people now in San Francisco doing really remarkable things. And I'm just so incredibly proud of it. And that feeling, you know, when you're a part of a group of people that are trying to solve a problem that's larger than themselves is really, really special. I think there's, again, the cliche of, you know, maybe particularly in San Francisco, but more of workplace culture being like your family, mm-hmm. I kind of disagree with. I think at the end of the day, work is about performance. It's about high performance. It's often about honesty. It's often about pressure. But it's so much better when it's personal. Family is it's about unequivocal love, work is about performance, and ultimately it can be difficult. And the best teams I've been in have had, you know, remarkable honesty about when things are going well and when they're not. But equally, a closeness, and I feel very, very lucky at Allbirds to sort of have something very, very similar to that.
I love that. We have a phrase here, performance family,
mm-hmm.
that we borrowed from one of our investors. But it speaks to it. You have to perform and to stay in the family.
Yeah.
And if you're in the family, there's respect, there's love, there's all those things, there's honesty, but you need to perform.
And respect and love sometimes is about really direct feedback and honesty about when things are going well and when they're not. And I certainly, the best sporting teams I had, were a part of, were remarkable in their ability to call out underperformance.
Right.
But equally remarkable for their ability to laugh about that, and to laugh about the challenge and the journey that you're on, and to be very, very close. So also made up of different characters. And I think that's the other thing, that, you know, a team, you know, by definition in sports, you know, in basketball, maybe everyone's tall, but some are taller. And
we got some short people.
Short people, and some are fast, and everyone's got a role to play. And I think about that in the way that we've conceived of the team at Allbirds. There's people with vast experience and some with, you know, with none, some, you know lots about shoes and some who don't, some who are extroverted, many who are introverted. The mixture of people and the diversity of points of view and opinions and ranges of experience have been central to our ability, I think, to move really quickly and take on a big challenge.
So what are qualities you look for to hire, and then qualities look for where you say, there's no way we can hire that person?
Every company's different, and I think you're always looking for sort of the fit for the moment and the opportunity of where your business is and where that person is, and whether those two sort of things sync up. At its core, it's about high capability and low ego.
Love that.
And it's maybe
high capability, low ego. I'm repeating that one. It's a good one.
Maybe it's that simple. And it's, of course, not, because it's complicated, nuanced, depending on the position and a range of other factors. But ultimately, you know, I feel like if you buy in to the team first, and you buy into what that team's trying to achieve, and you make it about that first, you're halfway there.
Well, I want to stay on sport for a moment, because you're hitting so many things that resonate with me, and I go to sport. So it's like with sport, there's certain things you can't teach.
Mm-hmm.
Like for basketball, I'd say you can't teach heat. Teach height, excuse me. For soccer, you can't teach speed. Mm-hmm. Like there's certain things you can work on, and like there's certain things with regards to mindset, they're just hard to teach. And there are other things you can. Like I can teach you, you know, to be better at accounting or other things, but there's certain things with regards to mindset, hard to teach.
The mindset is so important, and from the very beginning we've tried to codify our values, our mission. We wrote a vision, 10-year vision, as an organization that we share with everyone that interviews with us, and we've tried to sort of say, hey, this is kind of where we're going and what we stand for, and it's not right or wrong necessarily. It's just we've put this down, and if this is a fit, great, and if it's not, then, you know, that's fine too. But I really do think the qualities of buying into the group and the collective have been really, really successful for us.
And so one thing I think about a lot is adversity and what you learn from sport. I think when you're winning, just like life, things are they're easier. But when you're losing, very easy to call, you know, blame someone, not be accountable. Like, talk about adversity and what you've learned and how that's shaped you as an entrepreneur.
I think sports can be incredibly humbling. And I touched on it before. You know, you literally can be on fire, flying, winning all these games, and then you can lose to the bottom team in the league. So that sense of humility, but also vigilance around your performance, is super important. And also the other thing from sport, I mean, I'm coming in largely to a category. Both Joey and I never had worked in shoes before or knew how really they were made and had to learn that. Neither of us have led businesses before. And I think that ability or that mindset of the athlete to kind of come in and take something that's really, really complicated in elite sporting performance and break it down to just sort of day by day, come in, get a little bit better. And that sort of has been our mentality and the way that we've approached it to Allbirds. And that ability to continuously improve, I think, has been really helpful, because it compounds. And I think that type of mindset can take you a long way. And you don't try and do it all in a week. You know, I remember some of the worst teams that we would be in. You know, you'd lose a game and then you'd lose another game, and inevitably what would happen, there'd be some sort of crisis meeting and the team would get called in and we'd go, guys, this isn't, you know, this is not good enough. We've got to start winning. This is super important. Our careers are on the line. And we'd go out and train really well with a huge intensity, and it would last for a week and you'd get a great result, and then you'd revert back to the behaviour that got you there in the first place. And it's much, much harder to just maintain that performance consistently, do all the right things every day, so that over time, that's where I think, in my experience, certainly from sport, where kind of, you know, greatness is achieved is those habits and performance, not just in short bursts, but over a long, long period of time.
So you're an entrepreneur. You travel. We've talked about this. You travel a shitload. I remember you telling me you took a flight to Asia and your back was hurting so much you had to stand the whole flight. We've bonded over lower back pain when we first met a while ago. You've got a young daughter. How do you take care of yourself? Like, what? How does wellness? How does mindset? What's that role in your life? And how does that make you a better entrepreneur and CEO? And how do you deal with the stress? How do you find time to take care of you?
I'm not sure I have a perfect answer for that, except to say that it's really important. And for me, exercise is space. It's less about fitness and more about the one time when you're kind of alone, and I use it as the thing that resets me mentally. And I'll go and you know, go for a run for 30 minutes, and whatever problem I had before it is gone. I've forgotten about it, and that's what a run or a little bout of exercise has been for me, and it's really, really important. And when I don't do it, I find something's missing. And I also find I have less energy, all the things that you know and your audience will know. I tend to eat less well, all of those things. But for me, it's about space and alone time. And so it's really important. And I try and do something every other day. That's kind of my thing. It's not every day, but every other day I need to kind of, you know, get a decent moment to kind of go exercise. And it's really, really important. So that would be the kind of the one sort of thing that's a focus for me and really, really important for my state of mind and my performance as a, you know, as a part of the Allbirds team.
So running's like a moving meditation for you?
Yep. And I've never meditated or really.
And you live in San Francisco? Come on.
I know.
You don't meditate, you don't have a Tesla. Like, I don't know.
I mean, yeah, it's always, everyone sort of says, oh, you should meditate. And I say, oh, I don't have time for that. And that's part of the reason you should meditate in the first place. The exercise, that's my thing. Everyone's got their own. I wouldn't say that I've got all the answers, but that's certainly been it's important for me.
And how do you, in terms of mindset, I want to like touch on that a little bit more, because I loved a lot of what you said. Like, what do you think is a successful or say winning mindset for people out there who start business? A lot of people start businesses every year and most of them are not successful, and it's a grind. What do you think is necessary in terms of mindset that you see in people who are successful?
It's really interesting. I mean, for me, couple of sort of thoughts on that. I mean, one, having a partner, Joey, has been critical. You know, I started the problem initially was kind of mine, and I set out to build this thing, and it's only got great since Joey and I teamed up, and we're very different, and we have different skill sets, and that's been the moment where this got really fun. It was very, very hard doing it by yourself, and I'm sure some people can and many have. For me, the partnership was really, really important. And then the second thing is feedback. And I think anyone that's trying to bring something into the world sort of by definition is going to get feedback on that. And I think there's a lot of discussion and a lot of people talk about the importance of feedback and seeking feedback with an idea or whatever it is that you're trying to build. And it's very, very important. If you don't do that, you're dumb. You're equally as dumb if you listen too much to it. And I think that's talked about less. And the number of experts that we've bumped into over the years that have told us what we were trying to do was impossible. And the ability to toggle between, you know, again, confidence and humility to listen intently but also to ignore, I think is hard. And something you need to develop an instinct for, But ultimately, if we'd listened to all the feedback, then I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you.
So in talking about balancing all this and mindset, how do you do it with family too? You're married, you have a young daughter. Like how does that work? How do you do it all?
I don't think you do. And I used to think that I was empathetic to being a parent before I was one, and I was miles away from it. And it's just been incredibly humbling and the hardest thing I've ever done. And the short answer is, and any parent I'm sure would testify to this, you feel like you're running around not doing anything quite as well as you could have, and it's wonderful, and very, very special, and I feel very, very lucky, and it's difficult. So there is no answer, and anyone maybe who tells you that there is one is probably lying. That's maybe my experience.
So going back to Allbirds, there's something so special about the brand. We're like, our little daughter wears Allbirds, and my mother-in-law wears Allbirds. Like, what is it about the brand that you think is transcending age groups, demographics? Like, what is it do you think that people are responding to?
Yeah, I think the short answer is 1,000 things. And I think if we've done, we've cared about all the details, and I think that matters. And in the same way that you're preparing for a game on the weekend in a professional sports setting, all those details matter, and they add up ultimately to your performance, and you might not know that. And I think whether it be from packaging to customer service to what we do as a brand when the size of the shoe that you ordered is wrong, all of those things add up, I think, to an overall experience. And we've, not to say that we've got them all right, but we've certainly cared about them, and I think that's made a difference. I also think as a brand and a business, we've had a very, very clear sense of what we stand for and the purpose around why we've started the business beyond making and selling a product. And I think we've also worked out what we're not. I think there's a very, very clear sense of doing a few things and doing it really well. And we're about simple design and comfort. We sold one shoe for the first 14 months.
Yes. And you still don't do size 15. I'm going to call that out. Every time I see you, I say, when are you going to do the size 15s?
Well, it's interesting because it's not traditionally how the footwear space...
People don't make shoes for me. It's okay.
We need to fix that. I'm sorry.
I'm like, I don't even know what percentage of the population I am, but if you're talking about simplicity and focus, don't focus on me.
That's totally fair. That's totally fair feedback. I think at the end of the day, we've tried to keep a sense of humor in the brand and a lightness to the spirit of how we've tried to make our products. And look, it's really humbling to see sort of how widely it's been adopted.
So great brands, and I would say you have a great brand, like they evoke emotion, they evoke feeling, they are statements for people, like the same way. So what do you think people who are all, like, what do you think is, someone who's wearing Allbirds, like, what does that say about them? What do you think?
I think we've done some things right. We've got a long way to go to be called a great brand, certainly. But I feel like we've had the courage to have a point of view. And I sort of liken that to you and I going for dinner on a Friday night, and you suggest a local Italian restaurant, and we show up, and you say, "Don't worry, Tim, I'm going to order. I know this place. I love this place. I come here all the time." And you order, and you take care of it, and we have this wonderful evening because you've had the courage to have a point of view. And a wave of relief comes over me because it's one less choice that I've had to make during my day. And that sense of a brand, having the courage to do one or two things really well and have a point of view, I think is really important. And I think the brands that are doing that at the moment, particularly in a direct-to-consumer sort of context, are having some success. I also sort of think you give room for people to tell their own story on top of your brand.
Sure.
You're not giving them all the answers. And I think, we've tried to make a great product. We've tried to make it comfortable, simple, and then let people go and run and do different things with that and tell their own stories on top of it. And it's been that's been one of the great joys of this, is you see little product being adopted widely by people that you never thought would be interested in all sorts of different ways, and that's been amazing. You need to kind of create room for that to happen.
Sure. But to do that is really hard. If you think about it, you're giving people room, and usually great brands, like, have, you talk about strong point of view and giving someone room, they're almost at the opposite ends, and that's very hard to do.
Yeah, I think all of these things are about tensions, because I think the great brands, implicitly are about standing for one thing. I mean, that's really sure. largely what a brand is. One thing, consistency, always the same. And then equally, the great brands somehow manage to do that, but always change and be sure. unpredictable. So there's tensions between those two things. And we're talking very much about the art of building a brand and a business. And you know, I think what we've tried to do is keep it simple and not try and think about it too much.
That's good advice for life. I'll repeat that. Keep it simple and not think about it too much. So what is next? Like what, talk about, okay, you launch with one shoe and then where are you today? And then where are you going in terms of categories, colors, retail locations, just where are you going in the next like year?
Well, what I mean by the simplicity piece is it's important. I mean, again, simplicity is hard. Yeah. And, you know, the idea that we were going to launch with one shoe is a great idea, assuming that people like that one shoe. And we went through hundreds of prototypes, literally hundreds, to arrive on the one silhouette that was right for us. And then equally, in terms of what we stand for as a brand, you know, I kind of reel off simple design, comfort, and sustainability. But that took years to work out that these were the three things that were the non-negotiable pillars of the brand. And so once you kind of work that out and you find out what you stand for and you understand the DNA of the business and the brand that you're trying to build, it's the courage to just leave it there. And that's what I mean about simplicity, to not try and make something for everyone. Try and just focus on the real, really, really simple tenets of what you stand for and why you started this. It's very, very hard to do in some ways.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I think it has been part of our approach and maybe it's part of the reason we've had some success.
So, but what is in the future beyond shoe? Like, where are you going with shoe? Like, when you say simple, comfort, and sustainability, I'm like, you could do houses.
Totally.
And I'm like, I'd live in a house that was simple, comfort, and sustainable.
But
like,
again, I mean, that's the sort of tension. That for me is like a huge compliment you've just paid. Because on the one hand, we're incredibly focused on just doing a couple of things. And on the other hand, it could be anything. And so the juxtaposition of those two ideas is really, really important. And we are insanely focused on the few products that we sell. And I think there's four or maybe possibly five styles now. We've made 27 changes, I think, to the Wool Runner since we launched it, in something more akin to software updates than traditionally how footwear operates. We've never had version 1, 2, or 3. There's just been one, and we've improved it relentlessly. And then, you know, beyond that, we've, you know, at the core of what the business is about is material innovation. So we've added different material solutions when we found different consumer problems. So we started with wool, we added eucalyptus fiber because we discovered that when the weather got really hot, wool was not as good as it could be. So we found eucalyptus fiber, which has a cooling quality as a material. And so anchoring this in consumer problems and focusing on those is really, I think, the guidepost for where you want to go. And where slowly as we get more bandwidth, capability, more confidence in our ability to execute, then we, you know, we open up the lens on what that could
be. So shoes for now still?
Shoes for now, yeah.
And then talk about retail locations.
So we stumbled into retail in some ways. We had a store below our office in San Francisco, and it was really successful. And we've added one in New York that was a pop-up that's now turned into a flagship location in Soho, and it's been fantastic for us. And recently launched in Covent Garden in London. Oh, and, wow. You know, retail has been a really important, you know, part of the last year, and will become increasingly so through next year. And you know, I think people from childhood will remember trying on shoes. They'll remember that.
Sure, the smell, the whole thing.
The smell and the weird metal thing that no one knows the name of that you use to fit and size your shoes. And so the ability for us as a brand to step back and imagine what a retail experience would be like for Allbirds has been really fun, and I'm really, really proud of how that's been built.
So what trends are you seeing right now in terms of sustainability, wellness, retail, consumer, just anything? I'm curious.
I'll probably come back to the earlier point. I think the brands that are having the courage to have a point of view to do one or two things really, really well are winning. I think this direct-to-consumer story is really interesting, and it's about putting the customer at the center of the experience. So I think that revolution is happening, and I think is only just in the beginning of kind of upending, you know, these categories that for so long have had retailism between the customer. I think the sustainability conversation is, I think, the problem of our generation in some ways. So I think the businesses, particularly in fashion, but more broadly, I think the businesses that are starting to put that front and center, to make it a non-negotiable, are the ones that are ultimately going to win in the long run. Because I believe there is a cost for carbon, and that's coming.
I think that I'm buying all this. Okay, so
sold.
I agree. So any great reads recently? Any great books?
I'm reading Walter Isaacson's book on Da Vinci at the moment. Really interesting. But Danny Meyer's Setting the Table.
Great book.
Have you read that one?
Every great restaurant starts with a great lease.
I really...
That's a good retail lesson.
I thought that was really... When I think about business books, that one always jumps to mind. And there's this wonderful anecdote there around literally setting the table and the story of just showing up every day and taking enormous pride in the service and the experience and being okay that's what you have to do every day. You've got to show up and you've got to perform. And I took that, and within the restaurant industry, that's especially true. But for anyone, I think, who's building a business, you've got to show up and you've got to get a little bit better.
And customer-centric.
Totally, yeah.
Customer-centric.
I think that's worth a read. Do you agree with that?
Totally. The other thing that's fascinating about him is, like, that guy evolved and pivoted. He went from super fine dining to Shake Shack.
Sure.
And now is trying to, like, get a little bit healthier there. And do you know Tender Greens?
Yes.
So we had Eric, one of the founders of Tender Greens, on the podcast. That's his main investor, and just, like, speaks so highly of him. But, like, talk about a guy who's reinvented and pivoted within an industry as it's changed.
Yeah, I just thought, and the resilience and the the calculated risk taking and all of those
humble
things.
Beginnings. Grew up in, like, St. Louis. Father, I think, was a failed entrepreneur, I want to say.
Yeah. No, yeah. That was a good one.
Yeah. So what keeps you up at night? And on the flip side, what has you excited every morning?
Oh, the short answer is everything. I mean, I think, you know, the building a business and a brand is hard, and it should be. And so you're always, if you're doing it right, I think, thinking about the 10 things you could be doing better at any given time. And, you know, certainly that sort of, we've had some success and so much further to go and so many more things to do. The coming in, again, that team thing, I'll come back to it, but that's the group of people we've assembled is really special, and that's the fun bit. And we're tackling something that's serious and hard, but there's a lot of laughter, and that sense of being part of that team there's nothing better than that.
And what about, if you could go back in time, give young Tim Brown advice in his early 20s, what advice would that be?
Oh, gosh, keep going. Trust your instincts. The number of times I nearly sort of quit, and if it wasn't for people close to me, particularly my family, girlfriend, now wife, to just keep on going, I wouldn't have got here. And trusted my instincts even more than maybe I have. Surrounded myself with people that I want to hang out with that inspire me. I think sometimes it took a long time to kind of work that out, to sort of say no to the way that I kind of, you know, designed my life. And so the confidence maybe to do that. But look, I just feel very, very lucky. The journey that I've had, you know, through sport and then now with the business and the people that I've met and are now, you know, working with and family, all those things, I feel very lucky.
Can you talk about saying no a bit more? It's something I'm learning to do, and I'm hearing a lot.
Yeah,
from a lot of people who are successful.
I think there's an art to that. I don't know that, you know, I have all the answers by any stretch, but I, you know, you've got a 100 units of energy, call it, and how you deploy those is very, very important, and you need to think carefully about where they go. And the vast majority will be for family. I think if you're doing it right, that's true. And there'll be work, and then there's friends, and how you think about that is something that you need to just be careful with. And sure. I think it's very, very easy to deploy those points of energy, if you follow my metaphor, through in the wrong space. Sure. And so you have to think about that.
Especially in San Francisco.
Yeah, I mean, look, someone told me, I mean, there's always another email to write. There's always another thing to do. And, you know, I think if we go back to sport, I think the rest is just as important as the performance. And so you just need to be thoughtful about your use of time to maximize that performance. And again, that's something that I think a lot about. I'm certainly not sure I have all the answers, but I think being intentional about the way you use your time and when you work and how you work is sort of really important.
Amen to that.
Yep.
Tim Brown, thanks so much.
Real pleasure to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks, guys.